heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation.
The nation.
And now, Malcolm.
All right, as we're talking here with Army First Lieutenant Clint Lawrence. And Clint, so you get the call from the president. Let's bring it right to that moment. What was that phone call like, and what were the emotions in your mind? What was you thinking?
Well, I was kind of overwhelmed that I was talking to the leader of the free world, and Vice President Pence was there as well. And it was all sort of unreal to me that I was able to have a real-time conversation with President Trump. He's somebody that I have admired for a long time. And, you know, the policies that he's put forth have been something that I think is really saving this country. And so it was really a blessing to me to be able to have a conversation with the president.
Now, you've obviously prayed for this phone call. Did you, in your heart of hearts, did you ever think this phone call was going to happen?
You're right. I have prayed for it. I prayed for President Trump's success, and I prayed that, you know, God would lead him in the right way to make the right decision. But I never thought that I would actually be able to talk to him and have the you know, the great blessing to be able to talk to the man in real time. So, it was very unbelievable. And it was, I think I'm much better off having had the opportunity to talk to the president, because it gave me a little insight into his personality and to what kind of man he is. And that, you know, when the cameras are not around, he's you know, a very different kind of person when he doesn't feel like he's constantly under attack. He's just a normal guy.
I think what you point out there, Clint, that's part of the attraction as to why the American people love this president. I think exactly what you say right there. He's a regular guy. He comes across that way. And I think the other thing, he's changed the boundaries of the presidency through social media and through new technology that, you know, we would not have seen that, you know, 25 years ago, you know, right? It's changed the whole game, hasn't it?
Right. It sure has.
Well, friends, let me introduce you here. First off, we're speaking again with Army First Lieutenant Clint Lawrence. And this is a story, national ramifications here. And, you know, what's interesting about this whole story is how one decision, one thought process changes you from a prison in Fort Leavenworth to really, to an American hero. Now, and let's be clear here, Clint, you were always a hero. I think the thing is, the American people were always behind you. At least that's what I felt on the platform in America Out Loud. My sense is that the American people were always behind you. And the key is there was, you know, just a lot of conversation to hopefully get the president that he would make this historic move, which is always comes under fire from the other side here. But so this is the story here again, where President Trump granted clemency to three military heroes really embroiled in charges of these war crimes. And of course, the president put out there right away that he wanted to give troops the confidence to fight and not be looking over their shoulder. And that really is the core of this story, people, as to what happens. Now, Clint, you were convicted of second-degree murder in the death of two Afghans, and one had disappeared there for a bit here. And now this full pardon and clemency, if you will, from the president gives you a whole new lease on life. We'll talk more about the actual incident in just a moment here. But from a human factor, when you're in Leavenworth, in that jail, you spent, what, 6+ years there?
Yep.
I mean, that's unbelievable. I can't put my mind around that. You get into the military for all the right reasons. You want to help the country. You want to do the right thing. And then you end up in a place where you never expected. So what happens from there? In all those years, describe those years first, Clint. Tell us what that was like on a day-to-day basis.
Well, you know, to get through something like that, you've got to be a very disciplined person. And, you know, so thankfully, you know, I had, you know, a long time in the Army before I went there to, you know, work on my discipline and my self-discipline, and the Army helps you with that. So, you know, I basically battened down the hatches, and I thought to myself, what exactly is the most important thing in my life right now? What are those things that will keep me going? And those things to me were, you know, my faith and, you know, believing in this country, my faith in God and my faith in this country and my faith in the men and women who wrote to me from all around the country and from other countries. And, you know, daily, every single day, getting letters from people saying, keep your head up and so on and so forth. And, you know, the second most important aspect to me was physical fitness. And, you know, so I've got faith, I've got physical fitness, and, you know, then I've got reading books. And so I took college classes while I was there. I did everything I possibly could to still live the same life that I would have lived on the outside had I not been sent to Leavenworth. So there were a few things missing. We didn't have the internet there, and that made things very, very, very difficult. But, you know, if you can try to look the bright side of everything, and that's what I try to do with my life, and that's largely based on faith, you can really live the same life that you're going to live anywhere. And no matter what situation you put in, you can find the positive in it, and you keep your eye on that positive. And so that's what I did. And it wasn't very hard for me, to be honest, because I believed in this country. I believed in God. And I believed that before long, someone would do the right thing and that the system would eventually right itself. And so when President Trump got elected in 2016, I knew that that was an answer to prayers. I knew that the system was righting itself. And so that's something I'm very thankful for.
Yeah. You know, you say there are two things. You're so right. Mental preparation, that's key important for anything, certainly being in whatever you do in life, including being in the military, clearly. But so mental preparation and health and fitness, those are the elements, aren't they, Clint? If you don't have those, you really got nothing. So you focused on what really mattered, which was your health and well-being, kind of keeping you centered through this kind of a storm you were going through right. Those years. But now the sentence initially was 20 years, and I think it was changed to 19. So, and you were like 6 years in plus, so you were still a long way off from seeing the light of day had he not done the clemency, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. I had probably a little under 13 years left.
Wow. I mean, to put that in perspective, when you're thinking about that in your mind, I imagine it's hard to put that out of your mind, isn't it, when you're in that kind of situation? I mean, it's tough.
It is, but, you know, there are other people who are going through worse things than you are. And so, you know, as a leader, you can't stop being a leader. So the Army trained me to be a leader. And for, you know, over a decade, I was the leader in the Army. And so you can't just turn that off, and you can't just untrain yourself, you know, to not be a leader. You can't just, you know, wake up one day and say, okay, I'm in prison, so I'm just going to only worry about myself now. You can't do that. It's just not something that's natural. And so I did everything I could while I was in there to try to help other people get on the right path. Because there's a lot of folks in there who are not on the right path. And to be quite honest with you, in the military justice system, not to get too political, but in the military justice system, there are a lot of folks who go to prison for, you know, a few years here and there just for political reasons, for political gain for one party or the other. And so there's, you know, right now there's a lot of folks while I was there, there's a lot of folks who were being sent to prison for sexual assault. And I had a hard time wrapping my head around that. Like, I didn't believe, and I don't believe, that the world's greatest military just attracts all these perverts. I just don't believe that. And we've got such a great military, but here's what I do believe, and I won't digress too far. Here's what I do believe. I do believe that the military justice system is very easy to manipulate. And so when you've got all of these left-leaning politicians who are crying and screaming about sexual assault in this country, the one place where they can put their hands on something and make a change, you know, for the good or for the bad, mm-hmm. is the military justice system, because, you know, it's very easily manipulated. And so they've done that, and it's resulted in a bunch of our great men in uniform and some of our great women in uniform being sent to prison for sexual assault. And these cases are ridiculous. And so, yeah, when I was there, I started seeing these guys come in, and I'm like, you know, you're a good looking guy. You're in shape. You've got everything going for you. You've got a great family. Your wife still supports you. Why in the world are you in prison for sexual assault? And so, you know, there are those cases like that, that I looked at them and I said, you know what, you need some guidance. You need me to help you get through this. And so I did everything I could to try to keep them and keep their mind in the right place, because they were very understandably completely off base. And they were completely knocked off of their trajectory in life. And, you know, their wives and their family are back home overwhelmed because they've all of a sudden become a single parent and a single parent household. And that's kind of overwhelming. And, oh, by the way, they've all of a sudden lost their husband's income from the military. So, you know, their wife can't really help them out. And so what I tried to do is continue to be an officer and continue to be a leader while I was there, to make sure that tell these guys, look, man, you're not a prisoner. You're not an inmate. You are still a soldier. You are still a non-commissioned officer. It doesn't matter what this court-martial said about you. You are still who you are, and don't forget that. And so that's something that I tried to impart on those guys. And, you know, I'll be honest with you. I pray for those guys still and every night, because the Army, the military, the Army does it most. The Army gets it wrong most from all the services. The Marine Corps does it the least. They get it wrong the least of all the services.
Wow.
And it's sad. It's just the way it is.
How do we fix the military justice system, Clint? How do we fix this?
Well, we've got to get Congress doing this. And there is a caucus called the Justice for Warriors Caucus. And Congressman Louie Gohmert from Texas, bless his heart, he is leading this charge. And so I know there's at least over a dozen of them that are on board with fixing the military justice system. But what we've got to do is we've got to get the military justice system on par with the federal courts at the very least. And so what we've got to do is we've got to get everybody that's not a lawyer or not a law enforcement professional, right, we've got to get all of those guys and gals out of the system. We've got to get them that get their hands out of the system. Hmm. And so when you've got an infantry general, like you've got an infantry commanding general who is the guy or gal that makes the decision to send somebody to prison based on all the facts that he or she has been briefed, that doesn't make any sense to me, because that infantry general, he or she maybe has taken 2 or 3 weeks at most of legal training in their whole career in the Army or in the military. And so it doesn't make any sense to have those kind of people, the commanders, making the decisions that a district attorney would make in the civilian world. And so what I'm pushing for is I'm pushing for military justice reform in such a way that we move the military justice system on par to a parallel track with the federal civilian courts. And they're already in code. They already are, in terms of murder in the military, it correlates to murder in the federal system. Okay. So for instance, if somebody gets, you know, convicted of murder in the military justice system, mm-hmm. they're automatically also convicted of murder in the federal courts as well. So it's just, you know, the charges, you know, they correlate over. The only thing is you've got the military brass in the Pentagon, the deep state brass, and I'm not going to back down from calling them out because they're corrupt. So, you know, you've got these guys and gals up there in the Pentagon who they don't want to relinquish control over the military justice system. And here's why. Because when you have senators like Senator Kirsten Gillibrand from New York, who's calling upon the Pentagon to fix what she calls a sexual assault epidemic in the military, these generals and admirals in the Pentagon, they can then say, okay, roger that, Senator, we're getting on it. And then they can go and find some of these ridiculous, you know, soft cases that have no weight to them whatsoever, but they can put their heavy hands upon the military justice system and send these guys to prison. And then they can turn around to that senator and they can say, look, Senator, we just sent 15 guys to prison for sexual assault. So make sure you give us everything we want, because we're giving you everything you want. And so that's how it's happening. That's how it works. And it, you know, to me, it's absolutely sad, because when you send somebody to prison, you're not only sending that guy to prison or that gal to prison. And by the way, these people are absolute, you know, I think we throw around the term heroes too much in this country, but these people are public servants. These military men and women have spent their entire lives in a lot of cases. I met a guy who had spent almost 30 years in the Air Force, and, you know, just to be sent to Fort Leavenworth to lose his retirement, lose his home, you know, almost lose his marriage. you know, luckily this guy had a great wife who fought for him, you know, like a mad woman until she got him out of prison. So, you know, the thing is that the problem is, though, is a lot of folks don't have that. And so it's just sad because when you send somebody to prison, you don't only send them to prison, you send their whole family to prison.
Clint, so what we're really talking about is really military justice reform. Now, the one thing about this president, as you know, and everybody listening knows, is when, and in fact, you've said this, I've heard you say this in other conversations and things you've said, when the president sees something broken, he wants to fix it. And again, that's a CEO mentality that one has because he comes from the private world of that as a CEO and as an executive. And I understand that. Having spent my life in boardrooms, I fully get what that means. Now, and you picked up on that as well. I know I've seen you do that. Now, what you just laid out with the military justice here, it seems to me there's a significant problem here you've just pointed out that I got to tell you what, 99% of Americans have not a clue. Because when we think of our military and we think of our military leadership, we think of a class of people that are above approach really here. These are people that we put in a higher level, I think, is what I'd say to you, Clint. At least the people I hang with, that's the way we look at it. And so there's this disconnect kind of thing going on with what's really happening, or these bad seeds in there. I'll call them bad seeds for a moment here. And then the other thing that really rips my ass up is when you say, well, they're using this for political purposes. And you know, you almost always see politics get into everything. I mean, it can mess up a one-car funeral. I mean, politics. Everything's political, right, they say. Right, really. And so now if this is that political and you're saying, I mean, it just really rubs me when you think about this, people, that the politics, the petty politics of a situation can throw people in jail in the slammer, destroy lives, not only their own life, but their loved ones and people around them. I'll tell you what, Clint, that should be lost on nobody, huh?
You're absolutely right. And here's the thing, right? You talked about the military and how it is viewed in the eyes of the public.
That's right.
And I'll say this. There are two different militaries in this country. You've got the world's greatest military. And what that is that's the men and women on the ground who fight the wars. And that are those are the people, those are the professionals that go to work. They wake up every single day and they go to work to do the nation's business in defending this country. And those men and women are the very best this country has to offer. Those people are absolutely amazing in every single way. And that they are something that this country can be proud of, and that every little kid in this country can look up to and think, I want to be just like that. That's the world's greatest military. But unfortunately, that military is controlled by another military, and those are the guys and gals in the Pentagon. And those people in the Pentagon have stars and birds on their collar, and they are no longer soldiers. They are no longer sailors. They are no longer Marines, Coast Guardsmen, Airmen, or Space Forcemen. They are no longer part of the military. They are no longer part of the world's greatest military. All they are is a bureaucrat, a politician who wears a uniform, right? And they disrespect that uniform every time they throw one of their own servicemen under the bus. And so that when they did that to me, and when they do that to these guys, these poor guys that are being sent to prison for sexual assault, they're disrespecting everything this uniform means. And so, you know, I'll say this, I've been discharged from the Army, and I don't have my VA benefits, and I don't have any association with the Army anymore. I spent most all of my adult life in the Army, and I would love to be back in uniform, and I would love to serve my country as long as it needs. But, you know, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go to law school, and I'm going to try to fix the military justice system. But, you know, the thing is I'm actually very disturbed at the Pentagon and the White House and their relationship right now. Because, you know, when President Trump ordered me on Friday night, President Trump, Friday at 4 o'clock Central Time, the president ordered me released. Well, did you know that the Pentagon refused to release me because they were frustrated that the president made this decision in the first place? Because they told him not to, and he said, I'm going to do what's right. It doesn't matter what you think. And the president told me that on the phone. He said, Clint, this is about to make a lot of people mad, but I don't care because it's the right thing to do. And I said, I told him, Mr. President, that right there is why the American people love you. And you know, and it's true. It's not me blowing smoke. It's true. The man does what's right. It doesn't matter who it who it makes mad. And, and so I think we need more of that in this country.
Well, there were a lot of people that were upset, and I did read the whole backstory. I do know that they were giving you a hard time. And if you don't know that out there, folks, what Clint's really saying is that even though the president, that's the highest order you could possibly give when the president makes that decision to grant clemency, and yet there were still people in higher-ups in the military that refused to go along with that. In fact, there were, you all read the big national story with Secretary of Navy Richard Spencer, who was removed from Secretary of Defense Mark Esper because of the Gallagher case, and the same thing. They went against what they wanted. So what that case proved, I think you would agree, Clint, is there's a lot of trickery going on in these cases, a lot of trickery with the higher-ups in the military, and the case in your point is right there. Listen, you haven't met face-to-face with the president. Will he have you guys in the White House? Has there been any conversation on that, or do you know?
Well, I don't know. That may be a question you could ask Susan Price. I know she's on this call.
Mm-hmm. She should be on this a little bit after. Yeah. Yeah. What I'm curious in is if he does that, I mean, I would hope he'd meet with you all. And the thing is, what you just said gave me a lot of hope a moment ago. You know, one of the things I've discovered, Clinton, life, out of bad always comes good. And so when you just said a moment ago, well, what I'd like to do is focus on this military justice reform. And you see, that's the silver lining in all of this. So I bet you're going to do some amazing things and step up. In fact, I'd like to get behind that and help you any way I can, and our platform as well, help you get that. Because I think what we just uncovered in this first segment, people, is that as you hear Clint speak there, is that we have some problems and issues. And the thing about this is, if we don't get to the core of the problem, if we don't fix the problem, what's happened is we do a disservice to people in the future who are going to be in the same situation as what these gentlemen were right here. And as Clint just pointed out, being the warrior and the patriot he is, hey, wait a minute. There are a hell of a lot of people left back there that need some attention. Thank you very much. And we need to focus on that. So listen, don't let that be lost on anybody here, what we're talking about here. Again, we stand locked in step here with our military, and as you know out here, and our law enforcement heroes as well, first responders and so forth. It's important. That's what makes America, America, both, you know, internationally and here back home as well. We'll have more with Army First Lieutenant Clint Lawrence in just a moment.
Listen to Malcolm, the voice of a nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. We're happy to join you here on The Voice of a Nation. Here we're speaking with Army First Lieutenant Clint Lawrence. And, you know, we've just talked about, really, we focused on really the problem. What I'm proud of the conversation that we had mostly just now is that to me, these kinds of things are opportunities to fix the system, people. And I think we just put the main part of this conversation with Clint right on what you just heard, military justice reform. And as Clint says, hey, wait a minute, I want to fix this thing. I want to do something about it. What I'm hoping is that he'll get the chance and the opportunity to sit down with President Trump, because listen, just as President Trump did, as you all know, the prison reform, you see that one, that was a big deal. This could be another problem that he could fix when we talk about this and we say, well, the president sees a problem, he wants to fix it here. Let's move the ball forward here, Clint, as we get into this a little bit more here. And, you know, a lot of this, you got to remember, stemmed up from the Obama administration. There was a lot of political going on back there. Again, as Clint said earlier, well, not to be too political. Well, listen, it's hard not to talk about these things and not be political, because, my golly, it's all political, Clint. This narrative that was put out there, Clint, where you could, the military couldn't really defend themselves. That was kind of a big issue and a big national talking point, where a lot of the soldiers could not defend themselves out there in these battleground situations. Speak about that a moment. What was that all about?
Well, I'll tell you this. This is something that's near and dear to my heart and everyone in the world's greatest military who actually fights these wars. If we're going to send the men and women who come from the small towns all around this country, if we're going to send those great men and women into combat and ask them to fight these wars that are long distance wars and we've been in for decades, if we're going to send these men and women, these boys and girls really, to these places where it's hell on earth and we're not going to have their backs, then what are we doing? If we're going to send these men and women over there, we've got to have their backs. And here's another thing. This is something that's extremely important for me to stress. If an American soldier or American service member goes to a foreign country and let's say they go off the reservation and just start willy-nilly doing whatever they want and killing people and doing whatever, pillaging and all kinds of stuff, well, then I absolutely 100% agree they need to be in Leavenworth. They need to be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. Because when the United States military goes anywhere and we have the red, white, and blue on our shoulder, we are representing every single person in the United States. And we are representing the values that this country stands for. Amen. And so when we go anywhere, we've got to be extremely judicious with how we act when we have that uniform on. And, you know, that really applies to being here in the United States as well. Mm-hmm. Anytime you put the uniform of the world's greatest military on, you need to be careful. And that's the same thing with being a police officer. And I love police officers. I just had the opportunity to spend mm-hmm. a little time with some police officers last night. Mm-hmm. Look, you've got to be careful when you're representing the people and when you're wearing a uniform. So when you do something wrong and bad faith, mm-hmm. then you need to be held accountable. But there's a difference in good faith and bad faith. When you are wearing that uniform, when you're wearing the uniform of a soldier overseas or a soldier back here,
that's right,
or a police officer back here, mm-hmm. and you act in good faith because you are trying to do your job and you're trying to do it right, and you make a decision in good faith mm-hmm. that people may not agree with, then the last thing in the world this country should do is put you in prison.
Clint, that is so important what you say there, buddy. We got to focus right on what you say there. God, that speaks to me, buddy, because that's where that whole thing happened with the law enforcement, the war on police back here at home as well. You're exactly right. We cover that all the time with Blue Lives right here on America Out Loud, and you're so right what you speak about there. And the thing is, let's remember this, Clint. These soldiers, they're human. They're human beings. And we're not perfect. There are none of us that are perfect. You, I, the next guy, none of us are perfect. And the thing is, like when you mentioned earlier in the earlier segment, Clint, about some of these people that are the large numbers that are being thrown in prison, in military prison. And, you know, what came to my mind right away, Clint, is, you know, some of these petty things or things that you say that they're being clamped down on. Some of these people, if they are even mistakes or things that happen, could be rehabilitated or things like that rather than destroy their lives. But the first measure shouldn't be to throw people in prison.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. And here's the thing to extend on that. The way we are in 2019, it's radically different than how this country has been in the past. So I want to tell you a quick story about a lieutenant that served in the Philippines way back in the early 1900s.
Okay.
This guy's name was Lieutenant Preston Brown. So Lieutenant Brown is in the Philippines. He is a combat leader, and his platoon, his patrol, encounters someone who they believe is an enemy operative. And they have every reason to believe that this person aided in the killing of one of their service members. And First Lieutenant Preston Brown killed the guy because he believed within every part of himself that this Filipino was an insurgent and had just aided in the killing of one of his mm-hmm. American servicemen.
Right.
Well, he was court-martialed because the Monday morning quarterbackers back here in the United States asked the question, well, why in the world did you have to kill him? Well, they weren't there, of course. So the president got directly involved in Lieutenant Brown's case. This is a first lieutenant, just like I was. Mm-hmm. And the president got involved, and this is in the early 1900s. And I would encourage your listeners to please go Google this and read this story, because it's very compelling. Did you know that when after the president got involved and said, leave Lieutenant Brown alone and go back to work, which is pretty, I mean, it's pretty recent. We've heard that pretty recent from this commander in chief. After the president in the early 1900s said, leave him alone and let him go back to work, we've got a war to fight. Did you know that Lieutenant Brown went on to become a major general and retire as a major general decades later?
Wow. But there's obviously a similar path there. Let's bring it back to that path right there, Clint, and talk about the battlefield. Let's bring it back to Afghanistan. We would be amiss not to talk about that. And there's a lot of stories out there. But let's summarize that story. As I understand, there were motorcycles. Again, a lot of these, the problem Americans have to understand is that, you know, the biggest problem we have out in these war zones is the suicide bombers. I mean, this right. is just common. I mean, this is what they do out there in Afghanistan and Iraq. And because this is the culture and the way of life, they think that going to Allah and dying is some sort of a virtuous sort of life somehow. And it's going to put them on a whole nother stratosphere. It's crazy. It's insane that there's no value for this life. But bring it back to those motorcycles, that moment of time, Clint, when you made the strategic decision and ordered your men to shoot. Bring us right there, please.
Well, I'll tell you, when you are an infantry lieutenant and you're serving in combat, you have an immense responsibility, and it's way too much for your age and experience level. You are essentially a governor of a small little area of Afghanistan, and you've got a lot of things on your shoulders. The first and foremost, you've got to safeguard the reputation of the United States of America, period. And so everything that you do, every decision that you make has to do that. You've got to make sure that the United States of America has a good reputation.
The fact that you recognize that and say that says volumes to me. You've said that twice now, and that says volumes to me, Clint. So kudos to you for that. And you're saying, you know, so you're on the field. And here's the thing, Clint, to your point right there on the field, you have seconds. This is a split-second decision. You have no time to think about this or send this up the food chain. You got to make a decision right there and then, right?
So I'd like to put you kind of in my head. For your attorneys listening, the mens rea. So I'd like to put you – I want you to know what was going through my head, and I want your listeners to know exactly what I was thinking. So I'm thinking to myself, I'm on this patrol. We're walking through minefields because that's for some reason where we were ordered to be. And so we were walking through these minefields, and we're trying to be careful not to step on mines. We are sprinkling foot powder to our left and to our right to make a little path so we don't step outside the path and step on a mine. So we're walking behind explosive sniffing dogs, and we have metal detector soldiers that are detecting for metal. So we're in a very stressful environment. And oh, by the way, the Army helicopters that are above us are radioing to me. And by the way, I'm the only one that has that radio on that radio net. I'm monitoring three nets, and because that's my job, right? And so the helicopters are radioing to me, and the woman, the pilot, it was a female pilot. She was awesome. But she radios to me, and she says something along the lines of, you've got a group of people to your north of your position, and they are massing. And essentially, I think to myself, okay, that's consistent with what the Taliban does when they know of an American patrol on the ground. And so meanwhile, back at headquarters, and I didn't know this at the time, but back at headquarters, there was a signal intercept team that was intercepting radio signals and cell phone signals from those guys that were in that group talking about where my patrol was and setting in a position to ambush us. Well, granted, I didn't know that at the time, but I'm relying on my commander's instinct on the ground. Think we were soldiers in the Iadrang Valley. The commander has to be the guy or gal who's on the ground, who's making these tough calls because that's what he or she gets paid to do. But not only because of that, you don't just go out there and make, you know, these autocratic decisions. You got to make decisions judiciously based on everything. And the first and foremost, is your men and you, the soldiers under your command, mm-hmm. you know, and then you've got all kinds of other things you got to think about. You got to think about all the homework that you've done in terms of what is the enemy acting like in this area? What have they acted like before? What has happened in this area before? What kind of engagements have we had in this area before? But the first and foremost thing in your mind is, I'll be damned if I allow myself to get my soldiers killed because of some decision I fail to make or some decision I make. And so you've got to be very careful. It's absolutely, you know, for a young person, as young as I was at the time, it's an immense degree of responsibility. And it's something that I think most governors and most states don't even have. It's a huge responsibility. And so you have to make these calls based on all the information that's available to you at the time. And oh, by the way, you've only got 3 or 4 seconds to make
the decision. And you're going to be held accountable for it. And that decision you make could impact your entire life, right? I mean, everything about it. So the decision you made right there on the battlefield, tell us about that decision.
Well, so I'm getting information from all of these different sources. And oh, by the way, the Afghan army soldiers that are up at front of our patrol, leading our patrol, start to fire on these men that are coming on the motorcycle down the road. And by the way, this is a road that they're not supposed to be riding on. These Taliban are clearly up to no good in my mind. My soldier or the Afghan soldiers start to fire on them and start yelling at them to stop and so on and so forth. I hear, of course, I can't see anything because of where I was located. So I'm relying on the reports that are coming from all of these different sources. And so then my soldiers ask me, he says, "Sir, can I fire?" And he tells me what the motorcycle's doing in a couple of seconds. And I say, "Yeah." And here's another thing that I'm thinking of, right? I'm not, you know, army officers are very, very good at what they do. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that I was very, very good. I'm not going to toot my own horn, but I'll say this: army officers are very good at what they do. And this country can be proud of them. So I sat down with all of my soldiers within a couple of hours of taking over that platoon. Mm-hmm. And I interviewed every single soldier in my platoon because I wanted to know who they were, what made them tick, what their strengths were and what their weaknesses were. And that you got to do that. And so I knew that the soldier that was asking me if he could fire at this motorcycle, I knew that man was a police officer in the civilian world before he joined the army. I knew that because I had talked to him. And so all of these things are going through my mind. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, one of the things that's going through my mind is, okay, this guy's a police officer. He's not going to try to do the wrong thing. He's not going to lead me astray. Right. And so I know these guys' information, these biographical details and everything, but I haven't worked with them for more than a couple of hours.
Sure.
So I don't know their instincts. I don't know, you know, the nuances of them. Mm-hmm. All I know is what they're telling me and what they're asking me. And so all I have here is I have this former civilian police officer who was had a sworn duty to protect and serve, who is asking me if he can shoot. And so all I know is that I've got this guy who I can trust. I know I can trust because he wore a badge. That is asking me if he can do this. And who am I to say no? Say no, you're going to put your life on the line. And here's another reason why. Because the intelligence reports that I had been reading, that all of us had been reading, every Army officer, combat officer in Afghanistan had been reading, is that the Taliban were routinely packing C4 explosives underneath the seats of the motorcycles. And they were actually molding these explosives so it looked like it was part of the seat. So it looked like it was part of the motorcycle. So it wouldn't send off any red flags. And so then what they do is what they still do actually is they drive these motorcycles who look these motorcycles look harmless, mm-hmm. and you have these guys they're martyrs, you know, in their minds, and they drive these motorcycles right up in the midst of American soldiers, mm-hmm. or Afghan soldiers or Afghan police, and they push a button on their handlebar and they detonate the gas tank and detonate the C4, and everybody's had a bad day. And so but here's the thing. It looks like a normal motorcycle. It doesn't, you don't see an AK-47 hanging off the guy's back. There's not a rocket launcher attached to it. It looks like a normal motorcycle. And so if you're a good officer, if you're a good combat leader, you read these reports and you know how the enemy's acting. And so just like General Hal Moore did in Iadrang Valley, you have to think to yourself nonstop. You have to think, what would I do if I were the enemy? What would I do if I was in his shoes? Mm-hmm. And so that's what you got to do as a leader. And you got one gal or one guy who has lieutenant bars on his uniform. And there's a reason for that, because that person has the big picture perspective all the time.
Chain of command.
Right, exactly. And he's not worried about, the lieutenant is not worried about if someone ate or if somebody's shoes are tied or if they've got the right socks on. He's not worried about that. He's worried about what's the enemy doing and how am I going to stop them from doing it?
Yeah, it's a big picture look. It's big picture stuff.
Absolutely. And so here's another thing, right? And so, you know, saying that, the soldiers who testified against me, by the way, they were ordered to testify against me, but those guys were all privates and sergeants. So in the military, that's low ranking folks, bless their hearts. I was a private myself, so I can say that.
That's right.
Those guys are all privates and sergeants. They don't have the big picture because they don't get paid to have the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
It's not their job. Their job is to worry about, are my shoes tied? Or do I have the right ammunition in my weapon? And, you know, is my weapon clean? And they're worried about, do I have water in my canteen? And so on and so forth. They're not worried about what the Taliban's doing because they don't have to, because they have a lieutenant to worry about that.
And Clint, some of those folks you're speaking about, they did not support the decision you made and they went against you, is what I've read after the fact. Yeah.
Absolutely. And here's the reason why. Perspective. Because one person in that patrol had a radio that was monitoring three nets, and that was me, because that was the guy that had the lieutenant bars on his uniform, because that was who was at the top of the chain of command. I was the officer on the ground, and the officer on the ground has to be given some sort of deference in terms of whether or not the chain of command second guesses their decisions. And so here's what you had. You had a super sensitive environment in Afghanistan at that time, where the status of forces agreement between the United States government and the Afghan government was being renegotiated under the Obama administration. And essentially the status of forces agreement says, okay, Afghanistan, we're going to bring our troops, the United States troops, into your country, but you're going to sign this agreement saying that if you don't like anything they do, we handle it. You don't, because we're not going to have Americans sit in Afghan prisons. And so they sign these agreements in every country we go into. We've had one in Korea for 50 something years. Mm-hmm. And so essentially we take care of our own. That's what that agreement means. Well, at that time, the Obama administration and the Afghan government were renegotiating status of forces agreement, right? And that's a very serious thing. It's a very, very serious thing, because you can't have American service members going over into a foreign country and then being put in an Afghan prison somewhere with Afghan prison guards and God knows what else is going on. You can't have that. That would be absolutely terrible for everybody involved. And so, what we had at that time was that agreement was being renegotiated. So both governments on both sides were extremely sensitive to any kind of anything that looked wrong at all. And so when I had a private who was, oh, by the way, the guy who asked me if he could fire in the first place, he went up to the company commander and said that we did something wrong. This guy, he was having regrets because he made a combat decision. And as a good man, as a former police officer, he's second guessing himself, because anytime you fire your weapon, if you're a good man or you're a good woman, you're going to second guess yourself. Look, good people don't want to kill other people.
They don't want to kill another human being. That's a good point, buddy.
Thank you very much. And good people, and I'll say this again, the United States military is full of good people.
Amen.
And there is not one of them that I have ever met in my decades of service that wants to kill someone. Even if it's the enemy, you don't want to kill another human being. It's
so, Clint, some of those guys that turned against you based on, and I'm so glad you brought this up a little bit. I mean, they actually said, and I've read here in the Army Times, they said that Clint was ignorant, overzealous, and out of control, that he hated the Afghan people, and he had spent recent days tormenting the locals and issuing death threats. So that kind of goes to the point of a lot of what you're talking about. A lot of this, I guess, was just what? Taken out of context.
Yeah, absolutely. It's perspective. That's all it is perspective. And I didn't know those soldiers. I was there for a few days, several hours, really.
Right.
They didn't know me. So when this soldier, this private, had a second guessing himself moment, and went to the commander, and the commander initiated an investigation based on this really sensitive environment that we were in, and that everything rolled downhill from there. In the military justice system, when you have a full bird colonel who is being briefed on some situation like this, and there's a bunch of captains and majors sitting in the room, the colonel doesn't have to say anything at all. If he frowns when he hears it everybody in the room takes that as an order to make sure that something's done about it, right?
Right.
If he smiles about it or he shrugs his shoulders about it, everybody in the room follows his lead. That's the military justice system for you. And so I had a colonel, Colonel Brian Menace, that I'm not afraid to call out because he's about to make four-star general. I had this colonel who was a butt kisser and someone who was more concerned and is on record being more concerned about the lives of the Afghan people than he is about his own paratroopers.
Wow.
And that to me is absolutely abhorrent. You even have, look, you can dig so far into the weeds in this, it's ridiculous. This man is corrupt to his core, and he's still serving in uniform. And I'll call him out every single day of the week. I'm not scared to call somebody out.
No, you're not at all. Clint, the thing is about this is that you would agree with me when I say to you, the benefit of the doubt should go to our soldiers. I mean, as far as I can see. I mean, listen, there's a difference. Let's call it what it is, Clint. There's a difference between a madman on the battlefield who is doing things that are criminal in nature, and as you pointed out so well earlier, that strategic split moment second decision that could change a life. But again, where is the compassion here for our fellow human being, for our American soldier, when that's, I think, what's missing here is the human factor and the benefit of the doubt going to our soldier, which would be to the point, Clint, of what you said earlier about why we need military reform justice, because it looks like a lot of the benefit of the doubt is not going to our soldiers. It's going to the system. And let's face it, people, the system can really stink. Especially as Clint has pointed out already, when you've got political bureaucrats in there and pencil pushing dopes that are making the decisions that really don't impact their lives, and they somehow think it makes themselves look important, and it's not important, people. And that's a problem. Amen. And yeah, that needs to be said. So I think listeners would agree that you speak from the heart, Clint. And listen, that says plenty. One thing about radio, talk radio, you'll understand is people can read your body language so well, and you can't hide your authenticity. You either are or you're not. And people can detect that on you. I'm telling you, it's the truth. God's truth there. And you can tell you speak from the heart. And that is what I think resonates with people here. Let me tell you, I think everybody is standing up applauding you right now, brother, and recognize that. Listen, there's a reason things happen in life. I always believe, Clint, there's a reason that sometimes we get on this journey and God sends us down a path we don't expect we're going to be going on here. And as I said a little earlier on, I think in your case, it could very well be to right the wrongs of a military justice system that has gone awry.
Our global experts are brilliant writers and engaging hosts on a mission of a lifetime. You'll find the latest news and inspiration on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com.
Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store.
Just having a great conversation with Army First Lieutenant Clint Lawrence. Of course, he's received clemency from President Trump. Historical decision that the president decided to go against a lot of, you hear some of the political stuff that Clint and I were just talking about here. He, you know, went against the grain a little bit, which this president tends to do, people, when he sees something that needs to be fixed. I mean, I get that. I get what that means when you're dealing with a political system that can be far removed from the truth sometimes, people, you know. So again, Clint is back here now, and we're happy to have him with us here. And also joining us is Susan Price, and you probably recognize the name. She's a Gold Star mother. She's an investigative researcher, a patriot, veteran advocate, and a fabulous voice and commentator right here at America Out Loud. So I've asked Susan to join us as well, so we can, and I want to get into some questions. We have a lot of listener questions I want to talk about and that kind of thing as well here. Susan, I want to start here. As we talked to Clinton, we mentioned in the earlier segment, you know, to me, what we've uncovered thus far, if we're going to summarize it, it's the fact that we need military justice reform more than anything. And that's something we speak about, you write about a lot on the platform. What I'm wondering now is, we hear Clint talk about all this. I was hoping at this point that I would hear something, that the president was going to invite Clinton and the others to the White House. Typically, that is what I was hoping for, not to rub anyone's face in it, but to really put the spotlight on what really matters. And I think at that point, it would be a huge opportunity to potentially talk about military justice reform, which Clint has very eloquently pointed out is in dire need of some help here. What's the word on that, you think, Susan? Any thoughts to that end?
Absolutely, Malcolm. And that's actually one of my back burner projects that I will be working on in 2020 as I meet a lot of people very close to the president. So, you know, the fingerprints of covert thuggery are ingrained deep within, because we have a generational legacy of ring knockers. And these people grew through the spawn after Operation Paperclip. And really, we go back in that time period, and I've seen it with the death of my son, who was set up by somebody within the State Department. I know firsthand who a lot of these bad generals and officers are. They're ingrained and tied into other officers I know that were almost put in the position that Clint was, or they were killed. Mm-hmm. And that's the case with my son. So I'm with Clint. I'm going to be working with him and his team. We're going to be fighting for this. We will get the attention of the president. Like Clint had mentioned, he prayed about it. And in our mind's eye, we see stuff, we envision it, we work toward that goal. And I know enough people that we will get in that door. We will make this happen.
I think what gives me hope, what gives me promise, and what I think people can feel out there is that, again, God willing, this president achieves the second term and stays healthy and fit to lead this nation forward into this next generation. And again, he will fix some of these things. No matter what, you have to see out there, as he's done other things, he will fix them, not in spite of his adversaries or in spite of his friend or foe, but because, as you've said, Clint, time and time again, and I've heard you say this, the president sees something wrong, he wants to fix it, doesn't he now, Clint?
He sure does. And I'll tell you this. Look, you said something earlier about, you know, I seem to be very emotionally involved in this and very mm-hmm. passionate about this. Look, I joined the Army when I was – I tried when I was 17, but they wouldn't let me. So I joined when I was 18 years old, and I spent my entire life in service to this country. And what did I get for it? I lost my home. I was able to buy a great little house there and outside of Fort Bragg. And it was amazing to me, because I grew up in absolute poverty here in Texas in Hunt County. And we come from a very poor family. And so I was so proud of myself whenever I was able to go put myself through college and buy myself a home. And I was the first person in my family to do both of those things. And so what did I get for it? I go to Afghanistan and I fight for my country. And I do everything that I can possibly do to be the best person that I could possibly be to represent this country and represent this Army. And I get sent to Fort Leavenworth for it. And when I get sent to Fort Leavenworth, I lose all of my retirement benefits. I lose the home that I had just bought. I lose my VA benefits. I lose absolutely everything. I lose the clothes off of my back. And they put me in shorts and a t-shirt, and they send me to Fort Leavenworth. And so I lose absolutely everything. And then here we are, lo and behold, in 2019. And next thing you know, President Trump says, hey, I'm letting you out of prison. And he doesn't just say that. He calls me. But here's another thing, right? And this is something that's an absolute sin that I believe. President told me, sitting right there with the vice president, he told me on the phone, he said, Clint, he said, this is going to be a pardon and an expungement, expungement being the key word. And he said, this will be like it never happened. He was like, you know, I'm giving you your life back. And he's like, this is going to make people mad, but I don't care. But here's the thing. Here's what actually happened. He signed a pardon, but he did not sign an expungement. And here's why. The Pentagon fought him every step of the way. And so all I've got now is I've got a pardon saying you're out of prison, right? And I still have a criminal record. It still looks like I'm a convicted murderer.
But he said he was going to remove that, but he hasn't done it yet.
Well, he hasn't because the Pentagon is fighting him every step of the way. And here's another thing, right? I think the president believes that, look, he's the president, right? He's the leader of the free world. He doesn't have time to read all the details of every document that's put in front of him. But I know the president said to me, and he believes that I should have had a full expungement, and I should have had all of my back pay, and I should have been put back on active duty and promoted with my peers and allowed to retire. I know he believes that. However, whoever is putting these documents in front of him to sign does not believe that. They're not on board with his agenda, and he doesn't have the time to sit there and read these documents. So what they're doing is they're subverting the will of the American people who elected this president, yeah, and more importantly, elected this agenda.
So this ain't over.
I hope it's not. But here's the thing. It's very important to your listeners that we understand what's happening here. Right. This is an internal coup. These people are close to the president, rubbing shoulders with him every single day. And they're saying, yes, sir, Mr. President, to his face. And then they're giving him documents that he doesn't want to, that he does not intend, that have stuff in them that he does not want them to have in them. Right. If that makes sense. The president is not being supported by his own people around him. And I'll say that until, you know, it gets fixed. And here's why. Here's how this happened. This situation happened in the first place. President Trump is a businessman. He is not a politician. He hasn't been a politician. So he knew that. He knew when he got elected that he was going to need some experts around him that were politicians. Right. And so he, God bless him, the man came in the White House and he says to himself, he says, all right, I don't know what I'm doing here. So I'm going to keep all these men and women here that worked for President Obama. I'm going to keep all these lower level men and women here that worked for President Obama. I'm talking about the people in the mailroom, the people, you know, cleaning the bathrooms in the White House, all those kind of people. These people are Obama people, and they worked in the White House under Obama, and yeah, I'm sure a lot of them worked under President Bush too. But here's the thing. God bless him, he knew that he had to keep stability for the American people, because he knew that when somebody on January 21st, 2017, a day after he took office, he wanted to make sure that the American people knew that they still had a government that worked. And he wanted to make sure, the president wanted to make sure, that if some retired school teacher from Ohio or from Indiana or from Hawaii or Alaska wrote to the White House, that somebody would be there to answer the letter. And so the president didn't come in and clean house like all the other presidents did. You can take it to the bank that President Obama did. You can take that to the bank, right? Right. So the president didn't do that. He did not come in and clean house. He didn't come in and purge.
And he's paid a price for that as well. He's paid a price for it. There are a lot of bureaucrats here. There really is a deep state, people. And our listeners know that. They're aware of what's going on here. And, of course, you're seeing that play central to the story here. They're not even honoring the president's orders here in the case of what he put out there for Clint Lawrence. And so there's still more work to be done here, although he's been pardoned. And we know Clint is blessed for that. He feels blessed. But there's more work to be done. Don't forget, he's got all of his back pay. He's got all of his life. He's got the criminal record that needs to come off. And they are still fighting. And that is unbelievable, people. I mean, that shouldn't happen that way. But it is. Big thank you here to, again, Army First Lieutenant Clint Lawrence and Gold Star Mother Susan Price. Thanks again for joining me here. It's time to get involved and get loud.